Chapter 7. The Gate of Weeds. Blightmaster Bubonicus sighed as he felt the marshy floor of the vaulted chamber tremble beneath his feet. The battle above was not going as well as he might have hoped. He considered joining the fray himself, but then discarded the idea. One more or less warrior would change the situation little, even if that warrior was himself. The die had been cast, and a doom set in motion. Either his or theirs. It didn't matter. All that mattered was his duty to protect the Gate of Weeds until it could be opened. The chamber was a large, hollowed-out cavern, dripping with slimes and moulds. It was damp and humid, and clouds of flies undulated through the air, dancing in time to a tune only they could hear. The walls were slick and wet, and skeletal shapes swam slowly through the hardened sargassum, moving inches across centuries. Support pillars made from dredged bones and basalt held up the ceiling, and the sevenfold rune of Nurgle had been carved into every flat surface. Balefire torches had been thrust through holes carved in protruding bones, and they cast their sickly glow over the space. The chamber was a holy place, a sacred tumour, but not for much longer, Bubonicus feared. The chamber shuddered. Water bubbled up from within the cracks in the sargassum, and the weeds, which sprouted like a carpet, rustled.
It was inevitable, I suppose. All great quests encounter hardship. It is the price of a good song, as the troubadours say.
He could smell lightning on the air. Smell was the wrong word. Taste? Yes, that sounded right. It all tasted of lightning. Harsh and sharp, an unpleasant taste, lacking in even the most basic of subtleties. The enemy possessed little in the way of subtlety. What could one expect of such garish creatures? But perhaps that was the point. That very lack of subtlety was what made them so fearsome an enemy, as evidenced by the armsmen scattered around the chamber, muttering nervously amongst themselves. More than 24 of the strongest and most disciplined of the Order's warriors were about him. Each and every one of them was blooded and experienced in the ways of war. They were veterans of the Spindlewood War and the conquest of the Rothorn. They had faced Bloodbound, Arcanites, and Aurochs without a backward step, and yet now they were afraid. Afraid of implacable silver shapes with unmoving faces. Afraid of the storm.
"Be not fearful, friends," Bubonicus said as he walked among them, reminding them of the power he wielded.
He caught one by the shoulder. The armsman yelped.
"You, Kuchuk, your grandfather stood with me at the Black Cistern, I recall."
The armsman gave him a hesitant, gap-toothed grimace.
"Aye, my lord. He passed there and watered the ground with his blood."
"A worthy death. And you, Galnag, isn't it? You and your shield sisters helped strike down the unsung champion in the Spindlewood, did you not?"
Galnag nodded jerkily, her ratty locks slipping from beneath her helm.
"A good day, that. A fine day, as this day will be."
Bubonicus looked around.
"Death is not the end, for any of us. Fall here, and an eternity of blissful servitude awaits you in the gardens of the King of all Flies. That I swear to you."
The armsmen cheered, their mucus-roughened voices resounding through the chamber. Bubonicus nodded in satisfaction. They would likely not survive this day, but all death served Grandfather's will, for only in death could new life flourish. So long as they died bravely and in service to a righteous cause, the garden would be waiting for them.
"They come,"
a voice croaked as the armsmen continued to cheer. Bubonicus turned. The hag was blind, her eyes lost beneath pus-filled growths. She had carved the sign of Nurgle into her own skull with a rusty spoon, and it still wept an oily discharge. The witch was blessed of the King of all Flies and nursed maggots in her pouchy flesh. The other members of her coven echoed her, their voices like the rustling of dry leaves. They were all broken things, with bloat bellies and withered limbs beneath their ragged robes. They squatted in the weeds, turning the clean waters that burbled up from below blessedly foul with their magics. It was only by their attention that the spells holding the sargassum to its current shape were maintained. Without it, the citadels would slowly, but surely, crumble back into patches of gulfweed and rock roses.
"They come, Sir Knight,"
the witch said again. Her voice scraped the air like a knife.
"I have ears," Bubonicus said mildly.
He didn't, really. Not for a long time. In fact, there wasn't much flesh left beneath his armor at all. He had sacrificed it, strip by strip, in service to the King of All Flies. He felt neither pride nor dismay at this. It was simply a fact. One more milestone in his 5 centuries of service. He was now the oldest of the surviving Blightmasters. Gentle Walgus was dead these long centuries, his bones fertilizing the dry soil of Shaiish. Gaspax Gahul had vanished into the depths of Ulgu, leading the 5th Pox Crusade. Even Ephraim Bolos, Lord Rotskull himself, was gone, lost to the fires of fate. Of the others, they had been but seedlings when the lady had first come to Cankerwall and brought Nurgle's blessings with her. It had not been Cankerwall then, but he could not recall its original name. Like so many of his memories, it was lost in the morass of time.
"You are thinking of her, not them," the witch said. "Your thoughts smell of moss and rotting flowers, a lover's bouquet."
Her coven fell into stuttering, nervous silence. To speak of the lady was to draw her eye, and few, save Bubonicus and his fellow knights, were eager to do that. It was only right that the lower orders fear her, for she was Nurgle's daughter and a goddess in all but name.
"I am always thinking of her," Bubonicus said. "The very moment we met is engraved upon my heart like a scar. She was beautiful then, in her slow decay. The beauty of despair, of new life waxing strong in dying flesh. The eternal dance."
His voice tolled out, echoing through the chamber.
"How we danced that night, around and around, as all about us the world was falling down."
"Falling down,"
the witch echoed, and her coven with her. Bubonicus glanced at them, annoyed. A scribe crouched at her feet, recording all of Bubonicus's words on his flesh with a sharpened stylus. The scribe moaned as the stylus cut through a scab. Such was the way of the order. The words and deeds of its Blightmasters must be captured and recorded for those who came after. Else, how would any know of their heroism? The deeds of the Order of the Fly were an inspiration for all who despaired in Nurgle's shadow, for in them was the true glory of desolation made flesh. They were the fly that laid the egg, which would become the maggot. At that thought, the Gatherer of Souls grumbled in agreement. He lifted the flail halberd. Power rippled through it. A mighty strength, such as only the gods could bestow. The Gatherer of Souls had once belonged to another, a greater champion by far than Bubonicus. He sought each day to ensure his worthiness to wield it in Grandfather's name. Its rusted blades bit more than bone, hooking and consuming the souls of its victims, and lending their strength to Bubonicus himself. The more he killed, the stronger he grew, and the stronger he grew, the more he could kill.
"But only with purpose," he murmured.
He was no frenzied bloodhound to kill without thought. No. Like a reaper, he took only what was owed. The souls he harvested were sent to Nurgle's garden, there to toil for all time beneath the beneficent eye of the Lord of all things. A good afterlife, and better than most deserved. The more souls he sent to the garden, the greater it grew. Soon, if the order were successful, it might even spill into Gairan itself. That would be a great day, if it ever came. The culmination of all their efforts since the beginning. He held out no hope for it, however. Hope was the enemy. Despair was his armor, and misery his shield. His strength waxed as that of the world waned. Whatever the outcome, the blighted duchies would hold to the oaths they made the day the lady had come to Cankerwall. They could do no less, for a knight without honor was nothing more than a brigand. Though it had to be said that honor had not been enough to win the day at the siege of the living city. The Order of the Fly had fought in the vanguard, as was their right, but they had been cruelly rebuffed time and again. At the 12-thorn gate, their standards had been cast down, and heroes had fallen. Gartrog had been there, Bubonicus recalled. The Lord Duke of Festophane had fought with all the courage of one of Grandfather's own beasts, but to no avail. Courage and honor meant little to the foes they faced. The floor cracked as the enemy's thunder reverberated again through the chamber. Clean water steamed as it pattered across his armor. He glanced down at the Gate of Weeds. The realm gate had risen up through the muck of the sargassum like a pearl from an oyster. It was round and flat, a pool of crystalline water rising from within a flattened circle of bent weeds, glowing with a pleasant light that left him feeling uncomfortably ill. Where the glow fell, the waters remained clear of all contagion. Once that glow had filled the entire chamber. Slowly but surely, thanks to the efforts of his witches, it had dwindled. Patience and persistence. These were the gardener's greatest tools, and Grandfather had gifted them to him in abundance. But there were all kinds of tools. Besides the witches and armsmen, 7x7 pox monks occupied the chamber floor, arrayed in 3 interlocking rings about the shimmering circumference of the Gate of Weeds. While the witches saw to the befouling of the waters, the blessed brothers of the blistered sepulchre had been droning prayers to Nurgle for as long as the Sargasso citadels had stood. Each prayer was another brick in the garden wall, bending the Gate of Weeds from its former path to another. What Sigmar had abandoned, Nurgle would claim through the labours of his most devoted servants. It was the most sacred of duties, and one any pox monk worth his tattered cowl would kill for. Indeed, some of them had killed for it. Such devotion to the Lord of all things was truly humbling, and Bubonicus had felt honoured to even witness it. But the time for such pleasures was fast vanishing. Now was the moment of ultimate desolation. All that remained was triumph or tragedy. He found himself gazing into the realm gate, hoping to spot some speck of blessed filth or murk. But all that he could see were those strange, indistinct shapes that haunted the depths. Vast shapes, like clouds, or nebulae of distant stars. Slaves they had taken from Gramin and the other reed cities believed that, once, the Sylvan Earth of the Verdant Bay had used the gate to swim between Gairan and Azir before Sigmar had sealed all routes to his high realm. Another false god. What sort of god fled honorable combat? What sort of god stole the harvest of another? The king of all flies was no thief, whatever else, and what he claimed he held. The Sylvan Earth who'd inhabited the bay were gone now, fed to the first balefires, or else broken and bent into servitude as scaffolding and bridges. Bubonicus sometimes regretted that. There were better uses for such creatures, and their screams had gone silent all too swiftly. But necessity had left little time for creativity. The chamber shook again. More cracks appeared in the floor and walls. More clean water spewed up, eliciting a squeal from one of the witches. The coven mistress shushed her follower with a clout on the side of the head. The storm warriors were drawing close. Perhaps that was why he sought comfort in memories of better times. He tightened his grip on his flail.
"Will it open soon, do you think?" he asked,
looking down at one of the pox monks seated on the floor. The leprous fanatic continued his droning hum, eyes closed, bandaged fingers tight on his bony knees.
"No, I suppose not.
Bubonicus sighed ponderously.
Will she think of me should I fall? He asked. Will she sing sweetly of me, or will I be a lesson to those who come after?
He shook his head. He had died before, many times, but like grandfather's flowers, he always blossomed anew in fertile soil. But each time was shorter than the last. Such was the will of the king of all flies. Soon, another would take his place as Blightmaster. Gatrog, perhaps. There was one destined to rise high in the esteem of the Lord of all things. His cousin had been much the same, and he had perished before his time.
Nurgle's will, Bubonicus said.
What would be, and no sense in worrying.
Nurgle's will,
the witch said, bowing. Her head snapped up, and her nostrils flared.
Someone comes. So you've said.
Nonetheless, Bubonicus gestured to the armsmen. Those closest to the only entrance to the chamber snapped to attention. The aperture was not a proper portal. Instead, it was a great crack in the sargassum, smoothed and widened by years of use. Water slithered through it, and soon enough the sound of splashing could be heard. A familiar form burst through the crack, slipping and sliding towards Bubonicus. The armsman stumbled to a halt and fell to his hands and knees.
My lord, Duke Gatrog sends word, the enemy. Ah, here, yes,
Bubonicus said, looking down at the little Rotbringer. Agag, that was his name, Gatrog's servant.
So I gathered. It is even as Gaspax Gahul said in his seminal treatise on siegecraft. No ploy survives contact with a motivated enemy.
Bubonicus sighed and gestured.
Up, gentle Agag, up. There is no time for kneeling.
The witch moaned.
They are coming, Sir Knight. Silver and fire.
Bubonicus grunted. He looked down at Agag.
You were followed.
Agag fell back, cowering in the filthy water.
No, no!
Bubonicus reached down and hauled him to his feet.
Yes.
He swatted the armsman in the chest, nearly knocking him back down.
Do not cower so, fool.
He looked at the witch.
Close, are they?
Getting closer,
she said, squeezing her pustules.
A blessed miasma recoils from them. They stink of fresh water and starlight.
Agag stumbled back.
I must go. Duke Gatrog needs me.
Bubonicus fixed him in place with a glare.
If the enemy has descended, he is likely beyond needing any aid you can provide. But I may yet make use of you. Draw your sword, Agag of Festerfane.
Agag paled, but did as Bubonicus commanded. The Blightmaster reached down and unhooked a wormy, rust-edged chalice from his belt. One of seven, the chalice was a sign of his rank and the esteem in which he was held by the king of all flies. The bowl of the chalice quivered with pus-filled veins, and somnolent flies clustered about its rim. The 77 verses of the feverish oath had been etched into its circumference by the delicate blade of the Lady of Cankerwall on the very day she had gifted it to him. Normally, the ritual he was about to undertake was meant only for chosen knights of the order. It was a communion with Nurgle himself, and only the worthy were fit to participate. But in some rare cases, exceptions could be made.
Needs must when demons drove.
He looked at the witch. He realized that he did not know her name. Too late to ask now.
Bend your magics to the realm gate. Help the holy brothers. I would see the garden before I pass from this world and into the next.
It will not open in time,
she said.
So long as it opens, my oaths are fulfilled. Do it.
He gestured sharply, and she bowed her head. Her coven shuffled towards the shimmering realm gate, already adding their voices to those of the pox monks. Without the witches, the chamber would grow unstable. A price worth paying, if Nurgle's will were done. Awkwardly, Bubonicus knelt and dragged the chalice through the murky waters. The liquid frothed and fumed, turning as black as tar. When the cup was full, he rose and said,
"Come, gentles, come, ye true servants of the king, and drink from the fly-blown chalice. Taste the blood of Nurgle, and rejoice."
Agak and the other armsmen gathered around, eyes wide. It was a rare thing for a commoner to be given a sip from a Blightmaster's chalice. It spoke to the necessity of the moment, rather than any worthiness on their part, but no one would complain. One by one, the armsmen took a sip and passed it along, until all of them had done so. When they had finished, their flesh steamed, and their eyes were alight with the febrile strength of Nurgle. They would fight to the last now. Bubonicus nodded in satisfaction.
"It is good. Those of you who survive shall rise up and be made true knights of the most blightsome order of the fly. Those who fall shall fertilize this ground in Nurgle's name."
He lifted the chalice high and poured what was left over the gaps in his visor. The frothy brew inundated what was left of him, filling him with Nurgle's blessing. He felt stronger, invigorated by the touch of his god. All too soon, it would fade, bringing weakness and sweet despair. The anticipation was a gift in and of itself.
"By our life or our death, we shall serve the king of all flies."
"Keep moving! Through the gap! Quickly now!"
Lord Castellan Grimm's voice echoed oddly in the twisting passage as he braced the shifting sargassum with his halberd. The lintel of the gap had cracked and had begun to sink until he'd interposed his weapon. His warriors squeezed past, moving as quickly as they were able. Grimm was accompanied by two retinues of liberators and a group of protectors, a force he was confident could face anything lurking in these depths. Already, they had dispatched beastmen and rotbringers alike, leaving a trail of burnt and twisted corpses in their wake. Once the last liberator was through, Grimm ripped his halberd free and joined them. The lintel collapsed, and the passageway sealed itself behind them. Stinking dust billowed, enveloping them for a moment. Grimm had pushed his way to the front before it had settled.
"Come, this is neither the time nor the place to dawdle."
The depths of the citadel were a warren of ill-shaped chambers and narrow passageways that curved and twisted in random fashion. Oily balefire torches flickered in crudely scooped alcoves, casting a sickening green haze over everything. It reminded Grimm of maggots chewing through the carcass of a dead animal, or termites boring through wood. The rotbringers had carved roots through the fossilized sargassum and worn them smooth with constant use. Luckily, most of their forces were above, fighting. Those left below were of little threat to either he or his warriors. It had been a lucky thing, spotting that rotbringer as he descended. Without him, Grimm might have searched for a way down for hours without finding it. Certainly too late to halt whatever he felt building in the air, even now. Morbus's senses had not misled him. The air was thick with a growing miasma, and the deeper they went, the stronger it became. This place was like the root of a rotten tooth, one he intended to pluck out before it was too late. At his side, Talon growled softly. The Griffhound's hackles were stiff, and his feathers ruffled in agitation. Grimm ran his fingers over the beast's skull.
"You have the scent. Good. Lead the way."
The Griffhound broke into a lope. Grimm followed. There was no need for silence, even if he had been so inclined. Better to let the enemy hear the oncoming storm and know fear. A frightened enemy was as good as defeated. As the stormcasts hurried after the Griffhound, the passageway bucked and shuddered. Cracks grew along the walls, and soon they were splashing through murky waters that bubbled up between gaps in the floor. Talon led them unerringly through the twisting labyrinth, following the stink of the magics brewing at its corrupt heart. The portal, when they found it, was less an entrance than an open scab in the surface of a wall. An oily light oozed from within, and flies clogged the air. There were no guards, no sentinels or sentries. Just the light and the flies. Water pulsed through the gap, trickling towards them. Talon raked the entrance with his claws and slunk back to sit beside Grimm. It was wide enough for a single stormcast to pass through. Grimm gestured impatiently.
Osric, liberate the path.
The Liberator Prime stepped forward, two-handed grandhammer raised. He struck the wall with all of his might. Cracks spiderweb from the point of impact. He spun the grandhammer, striking a second point, and then a third. His liberators moved to join him, their hammers thumping against the areas he'd weakened. In moments, the whole wall gave way and collapsed. A cloud of flies erupted through the curtain of dust. Grimm lifted his warding lantern and let its light spear out, eradicating the swarm of insects. The gap had been enlarged significantly. Now it was large enough for at least five stormcasts to march through it abreast. Without waiting for Grimm's command, Osric led his retinue through and into the chamber beyond. Grimm and the others followed. The chamber stank of rot and age and was clearly not man-made, despite the pillars that studded its circumference. It resembled the hulled shell of a nut, and bones cluttered the walls. Balefire torches cast a greenish glow across the recesses of the chamber, and weird shadows danced on the scabrous walls. Reeds and water covered the floor, making it resemble a marsh more than anything else. Grimm's eyes were immediately drawn to the realm gate, for it could be nothing else, glowing as it did. He recognized that light, felt it in his marrow, its warmth in his veins.
Azir, he whispered.
A guttural, echoing laugh caught his attention, snapping him from his reverie. He turned, scanning the weirdly lit chamber. A group of rotbringers carrying heavy shields, spears, and swords advanced across the chamber. They did so at the direction of the massive Chaos Knight, who stalked unhurriedly in their wake, his form bloated with fell power. He held a heavy halberd-like weapon in one hand and a balefire torch in the other. The creature laughed again.
I expected an army!
The words boomed out, bouncing from pillar to pillar.
If this is the best you can muster, perhaps my doubts are unfounded.
Grimm slammed the ferrule of his halberd down, splitting the dull cacophony that rose from the robed figures kneeling around the realm gate.
Osric, Pallas, single rank, lock shields!
The liberators moved up, arraying themselves in a square centered on Grimm and the protectors. The rotbringers charged, droning obscene chants to their blighted god.
Kaya, clear this filth from our path, Grimm said.
The Protector Prime nodded and stepped through the shield wall, her warriors spreading out to either side. As one, they began to advance across the chamber to meet the foe. Grimm and the liberators followed at a distance. Stormstrike glaives lanced out in sweeping rhythm, and rotbringers fell, their chants silenced. Kaya's warriors were the image of martial perfection, every blow synchronized and efficiently timed. But the rotbringers did not break as Grimm expected. Instead, they fought all the harder. The wounded and dying clutched at the stormcast's legs and arms, trying to bog them down so that their fellows could strike. The Protector's heavy Sigmarite armor absorbed most of these blows, but some got through. Grimm saw a Protector stagger and sink to one knee. A Rotbringer clubbed him with an axe. The blade shattered on his armor, but even so, he was knocked sprawling. Grimm extended his halberd.
Talon!
The Griffhound sprang forward, winnowing through the melee. He leapt on the Rotbringer, beak piercing the mortal's throat as they fell backwards in a tangle. The Protector got to his feet, using his weapon for leverage. As he rose, he swept the glaive out, slicing through a Rotbringer's midsection. The Chaos Knight continued to chuckle as his followers spent their lives in useless battle.
Inevitability in silver, the creature rumbled, his voice carrying easily over the noise. One might even call you knights. But you serve a lie, and your honor is built upon falsehood.
You must be burned to ash before anything of worth can grow in you.
He lifted the torch he held.
These fires were lit by the king of all flies himself. They guide us in our quest for ruination, and now they shall light the path to your doom, invader.
With that, the bloated warrior tossed the torch into the murky waters. Green flame erupted, spreading across the water as if it were oil. The surviving Rotbringers screamed joyfully as the flames consumed them, reducing them to the basest of elements. The water began to boil and froth. Grim felt the semi-solid sludge of the floor shift beneath his feet. As on the viaduct, the flames were warping the substance of their surroundings.
"Guard yourselves!" he shouted,
as the first burning tendril of sargassum rose serpent-like from the burning waters. It shot forward and punched through an unlucky liberator's shield and armor. The stormcast was driven backwards and pinned to a pillar with bone-cracking force. He groaned and slumped. Grim lashed out with his halberd and hacked through the twisting vine, freeing the wounded warrior. More tendrils burst from the water and sought their prey.
"Kaya! Defensive cordon!" Grim said,
dragging the liberator to his feet. Bloody craters marked the stormcast's chest and arm. At his command, the protectors fell back, slicing tendrils as they did so. Where their stormstrike glaives passed, the air rippled with celestial energies. Sargassum vines struck the burgeoning arcane veil and exploded into fiery bits. But not all of them. Some darted past the protectors and slammed into the shield wall. Shields buckled and liberators perished. As the flames spread, more tendrils burst from the water beneath the protectors to coil about them. Several of the warriors were dragged beneath the water, still struggling. The defensive cordon came apart, and soon every stormcast was battling for their life, all but isolated from their fellows by the weaving thicket of barbed vines. Grim whirled his halberd about, defending himself. There were too many tendrils darting in from every direction. Despite their discipline and the strength of their armor, he and his warriors would soon be overwhelmed. Thinking quickly, he opened his lantern and thrust it beneath the water. Azure light swelled, stretching beneath the churning murk. Steam rose from the surface as filth bubbled away, and the closest tendrils stiffened and dried. They cracked and fell apart as the waters were cleansed of the balefire's curse. As he bent to retrieve his lantern, Talon screeched in warning. Grim twisted aside as the skull-shaped ball of a flail slammed down, narrowly missing him. He jerked back, halberd extended. The Chaos Knight loomed over him.
"I am Bubonicus, Blightmaster of the Order of the Fly, and Knight of the Feverish Oath. Give me your name, so that I might know who it is I have sent to the garden."
"My name is no concern of yours," Grim spat.
He saw his lantern rolling beneath the water. But there was no way to reach it without opening himself up to his enemy. The Chaos Knight laughed.
"So be it. Die nameless and forgotten. I salute you nonetheless."
He swept back his flail, ready to strike. A shout distracted him. One of the remaining liberators charged, hammer raised. Bubonicus spun his weapon so that the halberd blade extended towards this new threat. With an impossible smoothness, he lunged. The blade scraped past the rim of the liberator's shield and struck his armor. Momentum did the rest. The liberator stumbled back, cursing. A moment later, he screamed, clutching at his head. Maggots erupted from the visor of his war helm, spilling from the mouth and eye slits. The liberator gave out a piteous groan and sank to one knee. More maggots squirmed from the joints of his armor, plopping into the water. A moment later, he collapsed, and lightning flashed upwards.
"Fie!" Bubonicus rumbled as the glare faded. "Fie on all cowards! That soul was owed to the king of all flies, even as yours is! The gatherer of souls must have its due."
He lifted his flail meaningfully. Grim set his feet.
Come and take it, then.
Bubonicus threw back his head and gave a hollow laugh.
I will, friend. Of that, have no doubts.
He started forward, flail clattering. The remaining stormcasts moved to intercept, but Grimm waved them off.
This one is mine. Take care of the others. Whatever happens, that gate must not open.
He raised his halberd, deflecting a blow that might have crushed his skull. Bubonicus was strong and faster than he looked. Grimm circled him, searching for a weak point. There was always a weak point. An old wound, a gap in the armor, something. The creature's plate rattled as he moved, as if it were full of metal flinders. Grimm's eyes fastened on his opponent's joints. They were baroque monstrosities, shaped like fluted buboes or grimacing faces, and far larger than they needed to be. All of Bubonicus's armor was of similar style, ornamental rather than functional. Sturdy, but with obvious flaws to the trained eye. Grimm pivoted, avoiding a sweeping blow, and jabbed with the spike tip of his halberd like a spear. It punched into a buckle strap, tearing it away. Bubonicus clapped a hand to it and spun. Grimm dropped to one knee. The gatherer of souls smashed through the column of bone. Splinters pattered across Grimm's visor as he rose up, driving the ferrule of his halberd into Bubonicus's chest. Bubonicus staggered back with a grumble of protest, and Grimm gave him no time to recover. The blade of his halberd carved a deep gouge across his opponent's chestplate.
You're too slow, Grimm said, circling the off-balance Chaos Warrior. Your armor is ornate to the point of impracticality, hindering your range of motion, and that flail is unwieldy and badly balanced. It was a gift, Bubonicus said, chuckling.
Grimm tensed and slid forward, letting the halberd extend ahead of him. The head of the blade punched into his opponent's elbow joint, buckling it. With a twist of his wrists, Grimm jerked Bubonicus off balance and sent him to the floor. The flail hummed out, faster than he'd expected, and he threw himself backwards. Bubonicus was on his feet in moments. It lashed out again, and Grimm awkwardly rolled aside. The floor cracked. Grimm shoved himself to his feet and was suddenly flying backwards, his world spinning. He struck a column and bounced off, falling to his hands and knees. He groped for his halberd, but he'd lost it. His chest plate was cracked and smoking from where the flail had touched it. Vision blurring, he clawed for his warding lantern. He heard Talon shriek in rage and Bubonicus roar in frustration. The Griffhound hurtled overhead and struck a pillar before flopping limply into the water. The floor shuddered beneath him as Bubonicus charged towards him.
You send a dog to face me,
the Chaos Knight roared, all trace of humor gone from his voice.
Have you no honor, son of Azir?
Honor. They were always yelling about honor, these monsters. As if honor excused their actions. As if honor explained their crimes. Grimm caught hold of the warding lantern and surged to his feet. The flail hissed down, barely scraping his armor as he slammed the warding lantern across Bubonicus's head. There was a sound of tearing metal and bursting rivets, and the helm popped loose and went spinning away. Bubonicus staggered. Grimm hit him again and again, bludgeoning his opponent with the lantern.
Honor, is it? What honor is there in befouling the land, in enslaving its people? You say my honor is a lie? Then what does that make yours?
Every question was punctuated with a blow. Bubonicus sank to his knees with a groan.
Answer me, Grimm snarled. Answer me.
The lantern swung down again. It smacked into Bubonicus's palm. Smoke bloomed from his gauntlet as the holy light burned the corroded metal. More burns scarred his armor. It had been reduced to slag in places. Bubonicus lifted his head. Grimm bit back an oath. The Chaos Knight had no face. Indeed, his head was nothing more than a rotten skull permeated with maggots and larvae. His blows had cracked the skull in places and shattered its jaw, but Bubonicus still spoke.
My answer is ever thus. For the lady!
With that, he shoved Grim back and crashed into him, knocking him backwards. They slewed through the water, struggling for control of the lantern.
I recognize you now, friend, Bubonicus hissed. I saw your stand at the 12-thorn gate, and marked you then for a brave warrior. I am pleased to see that I was right.
His jaw sagged, and maggots spilled out, splattering across Grim's visor. Grim cried out in disgust and drove his fist into Bubonicus's skull. Bone crumpled and burst. Maggots spilled over him, squirming through the slits in his visor and the cracks in his armor, carried by the splattering ichors. Grim fumbled for the lantern and flipped it all of the way open, allowing the full power of the light to beam forth. The maggots shriveled and the ichors steamed as his stomach heaved. He forced the twitching body away from him. He couldn't say whether any of them had got into his mouth. He clawed at the clasps on his helmet and pulled it off. He pounded on his chest and coughed, letting the light of his lantern wash over him. Talon limped towards him, favoring one paw. The griffhound chirruped in concern, and Grim leaned against his flank, breathing heavily. Several of his warriors started towards what was left of Bubonicus, weapons raised. Grim waved them off, still coughing.
Stay! Stay back! Don't get near it!
He heaved himself to his feet and snatched up the warding lantern.
Only the light of Azir can purify such a creature, he rasped.
His throat felt as if he had swallowed jagged shards of metal. He swept the light over Bubonicus's body until the baroque armor collapsed in on itself and was reduced to a scum of rust floating on the water. Only when the last of it had dispersed did he turn his attention to the realm gate. Bodies lay scattered about it. Kaya and Osric had done as he asked, with brutal efficiency.
All of them?
He asked, glancing at the Protector Prime. She nodded. They continued to chant, even as we cut them down. By her tone, he could tell she was sickened, both by their foes and what she had been forced to do.
Why did they not resist us? She asked, shaking her head.
I don't think they even knew we were here,
Osric said, peering into the depths of the realm gate.
As if there were weightier matters that better held their attention.
He stepped back.
Something's wrong. The water...
Get back, Osric,
Grim said, as he pulled on his helmet. The air throbbed with the buzzing of innumerable flies. The abominable runes marked on the walls began to glow with a faint radiance. The balefire torches whipped, as if caught in a strong wind. The surface of the realm gate began to bubble and foam, and the compacted reeds writhed in place, as if in agony. The clear waters turned an iridescent black, before suddenly spewing upwards in an unending flood. From out of the dark came a sound, deep and dolorous. As the black waters swept towards him, Grim thought that it might have been the tolling of some vast funerary bell.